culture, that there is money, and that it's worthwhile spending time to study for the examination. So anything that is remotely relating to that is perfect. We had people that talked from project management. We had people that talk about cybersecurity in general. We had one person talk about artificial intelligence. You may remember General Petraeus. You know, any topic is
well. Those are big shoes to fill.
I'm sorry.
I said those are big shoes to fill. I'm not going to pretend to hold a candle to General Petraeus, but.
Well, I mean, everybody is interesting. As long as the students learn something, I'll be happy. So thank you for accepting our invitation. And would you like to give us your thoughts on cybersecurity? And then we'll take some questions.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I'll start with a little bit of an introduction that hopefully is more interesting than the boring written bio. So hi, everybody. My name is Lisa Plagemeyer. I'm coming to you from Austin, Texas. I started my career in sales and marketing with Ford Motor Company. I come from the Detroit area. And that has absolutely nothing to do with security, obviously. I spent a long time in EMEA. I lived in Europe for 13 years, marketing and advertising cars to people in Eastern Europe and Northern Africa and Israel and Western Europe as well. I came back to the States and went to work for an automotive division of the big payroll processor, ADP. And ADP, of course, has a really mature security program. But again, I was still in marketing. I did a little product marketing, a little bit of customer success, but mostly marketing to auto manufacturers and car dealers. And that company had 500 million consumer records, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, everything you give when you go to finance a car at a car dealership. I started working with the security team because they wanted to market the security strength of the company, just like ADP still does to this day, right? They talk about their security strengths because their customers are trusting them with billions of dollars of payroll. And our customers are trusting us with hundreds of thousands of consumer records. So I was the appointed person from the marketing team to go understand the security stuff and work with the security team and meet with auto manufacturers and talk about our security program and see how we could partner with them and see how we could help dealers, how we could help manufacturers, things like that. So when I started working with the security team is when I got bit by the bug. I remember going to my first security conference and Brian Krebs was the keynote speaker. And that was it. I was smitten. It was so fascinating to me compared to selling software or selling cars or marketing those things. So in 2014, that company was spun off from ADP and the CISO recruited me to join the security team full time. And he wanted me to keep doing communications and marketing initiatives to our customers and he said, like, incident response, we're going to need communications for that. And, oh, by the way, would you also run a training and awareness program? And I said, what's training and awareness? And he said, you know, that stuff that ADP makes us do once a year for an hour. And he said, I want our names on everything in the security team once we're spun off and we're a new company. I don't want us to hide behind the potted plant in the corner anymore. I want all of our names to be on things. Instead of saying something is coming from the security team, it's going to be, you know, it's going to come from an individual. He said, so your name will be on that and the whole company will see it. And I said, well, if my name's going to be on it, then I'm not going to do that boring stuff that ADP made us do once a year. That stuff's horrible. People hate that stuff. So I realize all you folks are on a much more technical track, but there will come a time in your career when you'll very likely have some responsibility for training and awareness. It'll roll up to you or you'll have a person on your team doing it, or maybe you'll end up doing it. And it's more critical than you realize. You know, human error is still the root cause for almost every breach out there, right? I think IBM says 97% of breaches or 95% of breaches have human error as a root cause. So when I ran a training and awareness program, I hired a creative agency out of Portland, a boutique creative agency, and we did funny videos, we did game shows, we did things that were edgy. We approached it like it was a marketing campaign, like we were trying to sell you something. We're trying to sell you on behavior change. So I won some awards from SANS, and I've spoken at RSA and Gartner and all those good things for doing training and awareness programs that are out of the ordinary. I've worked for one other vendor in the space before I came to MediaPro. MediaPro's been at the top of the Gartner Magic Quadrant for 6 years doing training and awareness, and we have most of our clients are large enterprise. So right now we're doing a whole, I run the group that creates the training as well as our marketing team. And we've just done a whole series that doesn't use any fear as a motivator at all. So no hackers in hoodies, no cliched imagery, no binary floating across the screen, no close-up pictures of motherboards, none of that stuff. And it also doesn't use any fearful language. It doesn't use a militaristic tone. It doesn't talk about defenses and human firewalls and threats and things like that, because those words don't mean anything to your average human. Those words don't make people want to engage. And especially during a pandemic and the difficult year that we had in 2020, those words actually turn people off. And so we're selling positivity and optimism in this new training, like to the end user. We're trying to convince them that they'll have peace of mind if they change their behavior, as opposed to telling them the bad things that can happen if they don't change their behavior. So that's me and my career in a nutshell. I'm guessing one of the only people who's come to talk to you that has a background in things like marketing and psychology and German language rather than a bachelor's of science or computer science. But it takes all types. And I think that's one of the things that I see that's missing in a lot of folks is a degree of creativity. You know, if you look at some of the threat, I mean, think of how creative the bad guys have to be to do what they've done. If you look at, you know, how malware has changed over the years, how the attacks have changed over the years, there's some truly creative people on the other side, right? Across that front line. So I think we need to tap on creative skills just as much as analytical skills to be able to fight the good fight. But I could talk about this stuff forever. I could talk about training and awareness forever. I would say that one of the things I've seen in the last couple of years is more of an emphasis on being really integrated with your business. That's, you know, since I'm talking to students, if I think in terms of like what advice would I give you, it's to really understand your business. To understand what the goals and objectives are of your business, what makes your business run, how do you make money? And then to make sure you align your security program with those goals. Because at the end of the day, you're there to make sure that the business runs, but it runs securely. The people I see that struggle the most in their careers, that get the most burnout, are more focused, I'd say, on like security for security's sake or compliance for compliance sake, as opposed to, no, it's my job here to facilitate my business being successful in a secure way. You've got to see yourself as a conduit for the business being successful, as opposed to, you know, the old department of no kind of thing. People who do that, I think, are more successful. They're happier in their careers. They're less frustrated, less likely to burn out. And they get a seat at the table. If you're the department of no, if you're difficult to work with, if people see you as a barrier to meeting the business goals, then they leave you out of critical conversations where you need to have a seat at the table, because if you don't know what's happening, you can't secure it. And that's the other thing I've seen change in the last couple of years. A lot more CISOs who have an equal seat at the table, who get invited to meetings, who don't get involved at the last minute, you know, who have integrated security into different levels of the business and stages of product development and things like that, so that you're not an afterthought. If you're an afterthought, then you have a cultural problem and you have a communications problem. And somebody with my skill set, somebody with soft skills, is going to be an important member of your team to help you fix that cultural problem. That was really my job when I ran a program and I did communications for the security department. I worked on board presentations, all those kinds of things.
If I may, this is Laurent speaking. I can assert that what you just said is very, very true. I worked in a program. It was a big program, about $2 billion, a billion with a B. And cybersecurity was kind of ignored because of the cost. And cybersecurity would pretty much always say, no, you cannot do it like that. And it was a major uphill battle to force the key stakeholders to accept that they had to do things a different way. And yes, there was going to be an impact on time and schedule and probably quality as a result of security requirements. This is a big uphill battle for many cybersecurity people. So you are absolutely right. This said, you said something else, if I may. I'm gonna comment on what you just said. You said that, you said that it is required to have, sorry, someone's clicking. Hold on a second, I'll be right back.
Anybody else have a question while we're waiting?
Yeah, I do. I actually have a question. I mean, so how did you make the leap from a technical standpoint? Sorry, I'm gonna put my camera back on. Did you go back to school or did you take some classes or anything to bridge that gap in your technical skill set?
Yeah, I would say so it was on the job training. I would say the point where I made the biggest transition, where by every afternoon my brain would just be full, was when I made the transition from working for a manufacturing company like Ford and understanding how cars get built and sold. And then working for a technology company. So the division of ADP that I worked for was a SaaS company. And just having to understand the whole software development lifecycle, all that stuff, I found the people in the company who, I like to say, they spoke Lisa. Like, they spoke in terms I could understand. And they would come in my office and you know, whiteboard the whole software development lifecycle. And this was Waterfall. This was before Agile. You know, I just ate the elephant one bite at a time, trying to understand the technology world. And then once you understand that, making the leap to security was just kind of the next level. But and that was less challenging, I think, because my security knowledge is not incredibly technical. I'm not super, super deep. I understand the concepts. But understanding how software gets built and, you know, the company that I worked for, this it's now called CDK Global. It was ADP Dealer Services. We sold networks to car dealers. We sold, you know, so there are 35,000 networks out there that we had sold. There's every single thing a car dealer would need to run its business and everything a manufacturer would need to be connected to that dealer to supply them with parts and vehicles and pay warranty claims and all that stuff. We sold all that technology. So if you think about that, really complex environment like that with 35,000 car dealers around the world and about 20 different global manufacturers. Once I could wrap my head around that, understanding the security vulnerabilities in that kind of environment and understanding, enough about the threats to do my job was less of a stretch for me. Had I gone straight from a company like Ford into security, that would have been a lot harder. But I had made that jump to technology already.
Yeah, no, and it just kind of makes sense that, you know, most of the cyber security or cyber awareness training is for the layperson. And right. So it only makes sense that a layperson, at least initially, yeah. You were a layperson, you know, yeah. And presents it because so it's understandable to yeah. The same people. Because you're a highly technical person to put together cybersecurity awareness to probably be over everybody's head.
It is. So my CISO at the time, when he recruited me, he said, it is much, much easier and better to take somebody with good marketing and communication skills and teach them enough security than it would be to take somebody with deep security skills and try and teach them enough about marketing and communications. Because it's very common that marketers have to get enough subject matter expertise to market whatever it is they're selling. And it's not as common for people with deep security expertise to feel really comfortable doing a communication job every day. It's a totally different skill set. So, and I would say that some of the most convoluted programs that I've seen people run are run by people that are incredibly talented on the technical side, but then also aren't given enough bandwidth. That, in other words, they might be, you know, running a SOC, and then, oh, by the way, can you run a training and awareness program in your spare time? Like, it just, it, that's the other mistake I see a lot. Any reasonably sized organization needs to have a dedicated resource. Like, I know the recent, he just left Logman, but you've had him here, Gerald, Jerry Boyfield is a Bouchel, to see, like, Americanize his name, from Logman. He has a gal that he, on his staff, that he refers to as his security engagement lead. And that's her job, is to not just run the training and awareness program, but to just get business engagement across the board, across the organization, to make sure they're plugged in, and to encourage people to work more closely with the security team.
You know that he moved to a different company? He just resigned from Logman and he's moving to a different
company. Yeah, he's at are they owned by Salesforce? He's at I just spoke to him last week. Yeah, so he's just changed companies. Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's a great friend of mine. So what I apologize, what I was gonna say is that most of the compromises are about very basic stuff. Yes, a lot of vendors talk about endpoint protection and things like that, but most of the compromises, as we've seen in previous events, are based on failure, for example, to secure a router where someone leaves a default password and admin ID. Servers that are not patched, or there is still a default, or a guest account, for example. Very, very basic stuff. So yes, there are very complex compromises, but most of the compromises are right now very basic because most people fail to do very basic stuff. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, they fail to do the basics. And I'd go even further and say that most of the incidents that you handle in your day-to-day routine are going to be human error incidents that don't even necessarily involve a bad guy once you get to the root cause, right? It'll be a human being that, you know, sent data to the wrong place, that somehow data was exposed to somebody that it shouldn't have been, or, you know, a support tool that there's some weird pocket case that caused it to be able to do something it was never designed to do, that then created some sort of risk. So I would say half the incidents that I hear a lot of people talking about every day, the ones that I had to run, they have nothing to do at the end of the day, you know, with an actual threat actor. It's a well-intentioned employee who just made a mistake and created a problem.
Absolutely, yes. So if I may ask you this, as you may have guessed, we have a number of students who are right now in university, who are studying or who just graduated. What advices would you give them in terms of their career? So we have a number of people who are new to cybersecurity, who are considering cybersecurity careers, and what I'd like you to tell them is, you know, what are your thoughts? How could they grow into a cybersecurity position?
I would fall back on what I said earlier about being integrated with your business. You really want to be completely aligned with the business, and you want to be a partner. You want to be a good partner instead of that, like, you know, roadblocker department of no. In a lot of cases, you know, you could be coming into, if you're coming into a company, a new opportunity, you know, you might have some cleanup to do from a reputation standpoint. If you're at a company where the, you know, the security team has had a bad reputation, one of the first things we often recommend our customers do is survey their employees. You know, when was the last time you talked to somebody on the security team? Do you know the names of anybody on the security team? The last time you talked to me about the security team, was it a pleasant experience? Like, did you get what you needed? Would you know who to talk to? Are you afraid to talk to them? Do you dread talking to them? Just, we do. And a lot of our competitors do this as well. They have like a kind of a security culture survey. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that it's all about customer service or something like that, but you know, if you're not good to work with, then people will avoid working with you and they will go around every single possible, you know, policy and process that you have to try and get their jobs done without you. And again, if you don't know about stuff, you can't secure it. Like that's what keeps most CISOs up at night. So, you know, for instance, the division of ADP that I was at when we were spun off from ADP, ADP had a mandate for security. You're talking about billions of dollars of payroll. And so one of the things, we were a technology company in the automotive space. And so the leadership really wanted to kind of throw off the shackles of a lot of that financial services style security, which was a little nerve wracking for us because we have 100 billion consumer records that we would like to protect. So we had to be, instead of being able to just say, well, corporate says so, meaning, you know, corporate global security organization at ADP, we had to be able to say, well, no, you know, we need to do this because of XYZ, or we needed to influence instead of just mandate. And I'll tell you another story that kind of illustrates this. When I was at a previous vendor in the space a year or two ago, I wrote and taught a certification class on running a training and awareness program. And one of the things that we taught, and this is not unusual, SANS has a course and they teach the same thing, was Dr. Cialdini's Principles of Persuasion from the book that he wrote in the 80s about how to sell people on ideas and things and ethically. And I did an exercise it was a 3-day course that I taught. And one of the exercises was, once we learned all the different principles of persuasion, was pick one of these and tell me how you would use it to encourage people to take some security training or to watch a video or, you know, participate in some sort of training and awareness initiative. And 99% of the people in the class chose the principle of authority, which is just, you know, 9 out of 10 doctors recommend, or, you know, do it because we say you have to do it. And that's a problem. When the only reason that we can think of in the security world is for people to do it because we said so, that's really not incredibly compelling. And it's a little bit arrogant, to be honest. So the next time I used that kind of exercise, it was at RSA last year when we had RSA in person right before COVID. I was teaching a 2-hour lab with a colleague of mine from CoFence, which is a phishing simulation company, and an email security company. And I used that same exercise as one of the exercises in the 2-hour session. And I told people, you're not allowed to use the principle of authority. You can pick any of the other principles of persuasion that you want, but you're not allowed to use authority. I thought that was really telling about, you know, how we perceive our roles and how we want to get things done. A lot of security people come from backgrounds of you know, service to the country, military service or government service. And there's a chain of command that, you know, that we're used to following. You know, I have a lot of friends that were in law enforcement and these are fantastic people. But when you are working in the business world, especially if you're at a technology company or a company, you know, where the average age is very young, there aren't a lot of young people that want to do something just because somebody in authority told them to. And so finding other ways to influence people that aren't just because I said so, it's a good thing.
Yeah. That seems like it's a generational thing possibly too. Yeah. I mean, that might work, yeah, you know, on folks that are, you know, used to being told what to do, but like you said, the younger generations would resist that for sure.
Right.
Yeah. I have another job than teaching, and we've just been asked to do some training, take some training. It was supposed to be only 90 minutes. Most people took 2 hours. And I did ask afterwards to people how they did proceed. And of course, it was in great confidence. I said, you know, I don't care because, you know, I didn't create the training. I'm just curious. most people told me that they muted the event, let the videos play, came back every 2 minutes, push click until the exam, and then they Google the exam answers because you were required to pass. Right. I say, you know, my opinion on those is that anything that is required without a benefit, you know, people are just not going to pay attention to. And it's
my goal is to create training that doesn't feel like training. I want you to forget that you're taking training. So we're looking at building gamified training that might be more like Animal Crossing than security training. I mentioned we just built a series that doesn't use any of the typical cliches. I've done 3 or 4 different video series that are all like minute and a half videos that are really funny and entertaining, that literally have gotten, you know, the first one I ever put out got 1,300 views in the first day, and the president of the company had put a video out that same day and got 25 clicks. So I was pretty excited about my 1,300 views in one day. But they don't even look like they have anything to do with security. I had a conversation once with with the head of corporate communications where I used to run a program. And I had banners for this employee portal. I had, you know, stuff to use on internal social media, on Jabber, and email headers and all different kinds of tactics to get this campaign out. And none of it said anything. Like the banner on the employee homepage didn't say anything about security. It was building up this character. There was this aura around this main character who was the lead character in all the videos. And it was kind of like, click here to see what this character does, right? It was just to pull you in. And the head of communications, I had to run the program by her for review. And the CISO and I were on the phone with her, and she was saying, well, this needs clarity of message. This needs to say, click here to learn how to protect the company. And we said, what about the people who don't care about protecting the company? If you care about protecting the company, I got reams of content for you over on an employee security portal. You can read it to your heart's content. That's not my audience. That's not my problem. My target audience are the people who don't care. And so if I put something in front of them that says, you know, here's how to protect the company, and they don't care about protecting a company, they're not going to click. So sometimes you have to hide the vegetables in with the with the pudding. I like doing stuff that doesn't even at first glance look like it has anything to do with cybersecurity, but just draws people in so much. And then they, you know, they end up learning something in spite of themselves, like in the process. I don't recommend using a learning management system for those things, because like you were saying, as soon as you mandate something that's funny, you know, you have to watch this, it's been assigned to you. It's not funny anymore. So I try to do things.
I mean, that's a great analogy that, you know, if somebody is not interested in the goal of your training, then they're not going to, you know, take the training, nor are they going to listen to it.
Right.
You know, so you have to, you know, first figure out how to get them there and then give them the information.
Exactly.
If there's a video, I skip it. I mean, I will not pay attention if there's a video. Anything that has a video, skip. It's, you know, let me read it. If it's not written, I'll skip, personally. I may not be the perfect example, but typically.
Well, but if it was a comedy series of just videos and they were a minute long and you got one every week or two and it was funny, you might watch it, right?
Yeah, if it was a minute, I'd watch it. Yeah. We have the compliance training here too, and it's hours and hours. And I mean, the same example that you gave is you start the video, walk away, come back, and I really didn't learn anything. So that doesn't prove that I've learned the content. It just proves that I've checked the box, and that's not the intent.
Everybody has compliance that they have to deal with. And I did too, but I did the absolute bare minimum that would make me compliant. And then everything else that I put out for training and awareness was voluntary, all of it.
I've been sort of telling people, well, what videos or what have you read or what have you looked at in terms of cybersecurity, for example, and just letting people look at whatever they want?
What do you mean? I'm not sure I understand the question.
For example, one person may go to DEF CON and attend DEF CON. One person may read a book. One person may read an article in something, and you leave it completely dynamic where everybody does whatever they want, so that it's everybody does based on their interest.
If you look at marketing automation, things like Marketo or HubSpot or Eloqua, all those tools that big companies use to market to us, those tools determine what email they're going to send us, what web content we see with dynamic web content. They determine what we're going to see on social media. You know, we all complain that they're following us around. But if you think about getting the security message out in the same way that those tools work, then yes, what that means is you're building different paths for different personas. Or if you think about it like a sales funnel, maybe you're a software developer and I want to get your attention on a security topic, right? Maybe it's OWASP top 10 or 20 or something. And maybe my end goal is to get you to voluntarily take some secure coding training. But if I just assign that to you, you're going to be less enthusiastic and you're going to be that person like you described that just walks by their computer every 20 minutes and clicks so that they get through the training. So the way to think about that then is, okay, what kind of articles can I put out? What kind of social media messages can I put out? What are all the different communication channels I have available to me in my organization? And how can I lay those breadcrumbs and get you interested to the point where you put your hand up and say, you know what, I really want to be, a better coder. And I want to understand secure development practices. And can I please have some OWASP top 10 training? That's what you want. You want to create pull instead of always pushing things on people. We're contrarians. If you push something on me, I'm going to push back. If you tell me it's mandatory, I'm not going to enjoy it. So that's why only my compliance training was mandatory. Everything else was voluntary. And I tried to break down the different personas in the organization. Executive admins, they play an incredibly critical role because, they control executives' calendars and their email, and, they can catch things that the executives won't catch, whaling attacks, things like that. So maybe you do a particular style of training for them or have different content that's specific to them and their roles. Same thing with interns. I had a completely different, series of content for interns and way that we got security information in front of their eyeballs to get them engaged. That's what I advocate for, is creating different personas, understanding your organization, understanding people, what makes them tick. Salespeople, right? They're just going fast, right? Somebody sends them a phishing email that looks like a DocuSign when they're waiting for a contract to get signed, they're probably going to click on it. So, how do you approach them? How do you communicate with them on their level? How do you help them understand how they specifically get targeted? How do you get them engaged without scaring them and without slowing them down, especially at like month end close and times like that when they're going fast because they're trying to meet their numbers. It's about understanding your audience, and I'm with you. I totally agree that, we shouldn't be, if we think we have control over what people learn, then we're delusional. Like, people make their own choices for what they're going to engage with. They make their own choices on what they're going to give their very valuable attention to. And in training and awareness, it's our jobs to have a variety of content for a variety of different people at different stages of the funnel, depending on how engaged and interested they already are. If they're not engaged at all, if they're not interested in security, then the first thing we have to do is give their attention. If they're already engaged and interested, then we can serve them up meatier things, like articles on security vulnerabilities and things like that that would be pertinent to their jobs.
If I may make a comment, one thing that worked very well a few years ago, the security team came in, there was a big hands-on meeting, and they did a demo on how easy it was to compromise someone. So they asked for a volunteer, and they showed them, it was very basic stuff that people would do at work, and they just showed, and then it appealed to people. So they said, well, this is what you should have done. And they went backwards to explain how do you protect, but there was the hands-on with the live person making all of the stupid mistakes, which were understandable. I mean, everybody would do the same mistakes. I mean, it was, you know, I wouldn't blame the person. It was fairly normal. You know, you don't pay attention. And all it takes is 1 minute of inattention. I remember one example, even with Purdue, and I told Jay afterwards, Jay Blatt afterwards, that I clicked on email and he said it was something about the lunch has been canceled. And I didn't even think about it. I was like, okay. And I responded, okay. And I was like afterwards, who is this person? And it was too late. I mean, you know, I knew it. I just, you know, was busy doing something. I looked at my email, and, you know, since I always went for lunch with people, I was like, okay, I mean, you know, I must have forgotten something. And it's only afterwards that I realized that spear phishing attack. So it's easy to fall prey.
Yep, very easy. It happens. It's nobody's immune. Absolutely nobody. And that's why that tactic that you described, like that's a really good tactic for kind of shock and awe to get people's attention. I mean, I've seen you know, live pen testing in front of the developer who coded the software and to show how vulnerable their application was. And those sort of tactics can be interesting for some shock and awe, but the point what's important not to lose in there is that message that nobody's immune, even security people, because otherwise that's a really heavy-handed sort of shame message. Without that message that hey, this can happen to anybody.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned before, you know, the attitude of people today is resistance for one, but they're also, it's not going to happen to me. I would never click on the wrong email. I would never have that happen. You know, I mean, it's always thinking it's not going to happen. And I mean, if Dr. Picard or someone like myself or one of these professionals in the room can click on an email that they shouldn't click on, then clearly someone who's less savvy can certainly do so.
Right.
So it can happen to anybody. I just wanted to point out there's a couple questions in the chat. I don't know. Can you see the chat over there? If you want to look at those.
Yeah. So somebody asked here, what would your advice be for getting hired and started in the cybersecurity field? What are you seeing that new graduates hires are missing? Technical skills, not soft skills. I don't work with enough technologists right now. It's been 2 years that I've been, a little over 2.5 years, I guess now, that I've been with vendors in this space, as opposed to being part of a security team at a big corporation. But I will say, just in my 25 years of managing people, that it comes down to, and this is a buzzword these days, but it really comes down to emotional intelligence. It's very rarely, even in a technical role, it's very rarely somebody's technical skills or lack of technical skills that cost them, you know, maybe having a more successful career than they're having. Yeah, there's going to be those occasional people that don't have the technical skills, and you know, that's obviously a hindrance. But if all other things are equal, it's personality traits and it's characteristics and it's emotional intelligence. It's being able to communicate. It's being able to control your emotions, being able to lead a meeting. So I know this isn't the answer you were looking for because you said technical skills, not soft skills, but I would just say in general, don't ignore those things in life. You're gonna need them no matter what you do. We've got techs throughout the country who would argue that they're too busy fighting the ever-long fires to give a minute for anything other than their actual job. They receive instrumental training. It's rough when you're trying to teach old dogs new tricks. Yeah, I would say I'm still reading this question, sorry. Is there a better way to persuade? I think So you have to get really creative with the tactics. When you say they're even, the C-level doesn't buy in because the time cost impacts their productive time, which dings the wallet. Yeah, I hear that a lot, right? I mean, whenever I launched any sort of training initiative, especially, you know, taking 3,000 coders off their job to take some secure coding training, we always talked, you know, I did the math. You know, here's the average hourly rate of one of our developers. So this is the ding that we're going to hit to productivity if we do this training. But you've got to make some business arguments, right? The cost of fixing a vulnerability after it's in an application is far, far higher, something like four times higher than the cost of fixing it up front. You know, there's all that kind of data out there. You can also get creative with things like, you know, if you can convince executives to do a tabletop exercise, that is a very good way to open their eyes. The other thing that a friend of mine named John Scott over in the UK, he runs the training and awareness program for the Bank of England. And he started doing dossiers on executives. So they offered their senior executives a home visit to assess, do a physical security assessment of their residence in an IT assessment, right? Check their router and all that good stuff. And then sit with their family if the exec was open to it they would come prepared with a dossier on, you know, looking at, say it was somebody whose kids had just been on vacation and they're sharing vacation photos and, you know, just oversharing on social. They put together a dossier on how your family could be attacked or affected, and how easy it would be. Like, here's everything about you and your family online. And they offered these assessments and they promised up front, we're not going to spend more than an hour at your house. We're not going to take up too much of your time. And after he had done a couple of these, he said they all went at way over the allotted time because the executives had so many questions. And they asked a lot of questions that the executives wouldn't have asked at home or in the office because they were questions that that maybe showed their unfamiliarity with some of the technology. And they wouldn't have asked those questions in an executive leadership team meeting, but they felt comfortable with this one security person asking this question in their own home. So, that's a really relationship based one-on-one kind of thing. And that's super high touch. It's going to take some time, I see somebody else has advocated for Dr. Cialdini's book on influence. It is really an excellent book, even though it's like 30 years old or 40 years old now, and the principles all still apply. It's really social engineering for good, if you think about it. And persuasion, yes. I haven't had time to read these. Are there any other ones that stick out that you'd like me to address?
Early on, there was a question about security awareness training in a control systems world. I don't know if that makes sense to you or not.
No, it doesn't. Are you talking about like industrial control systems, like ICSs, those things? Or
that's what I Google. Had to Google it myself. And yeah, it seems more manufacturing engineering. Is that
what? Yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, I know the gal that runs the program at Rockwell. I know people, you know, we have plenty of customers in manufacturing situations. That's actually one of the things they struggle with, and this might not be addressing the question, but I'll take a stab. Is that, you know, the firmware updates on those ICSs happen with a flash drive. So how do you train somebody, you know, if you train somebody not to plug in random flash drives to things that you pick up at hotel room lobbies or at trade shows, then, you know, that conflicts with this process that they need to do to update ICSs. We're actually going to create a training module to address that because there's, I think where this whole industry is, the whole training and awareness industry, we've got all this training telling people don't click on stuff, right? Like how to know a phishing email, how to tell if that's a smish, how to tell if something's a BEC, how to tell if something's a safe link, you know, all those sort of basic things. But what's missing is like that next level down. You know, we don't want to turn all of the employees into security people, but we want to give them enough knowledge that they know when to call on the security people or how to do their specific job securely. And I think ICSs are a perfect example of that, because the normal sort of end user training, awareness training that says, you know, be careful with flash drives, doesn't really give them what they need to do their job securely. So so we're looking at that. We're looking at like security training for IT people, where we're not going to turn them into, you know, I don't want to make a SysBee out of my sysadmin, but they need to know, you know, more than just how to tell a phishing email. So I think that's a, that sort of role-based security training is going to get more and more popular in the coming years, because people, I mean, I had a CISO once used to say that eventually we need to all put ourselves out of a job as best we can, meaning everybody needs to integrate security into whatever they do, because we can't run around, you know, we can't chase after everybody and just clean up. We, you know, we've got to empower people, and they've got to be able to, we've got to have more role-based training so that people know how to do their specific functions securely. Because there'll never be enough security people. It's like a problem with software vulnerabilities. We had, I worked in an organization that had, three AppSec guys for 3000 software developers. The national average is more like 100 to 1 instead of 1,000 to 1, but you know, you're never going to get out ahead of that. You just aren't, you know, the first thing you got to do is stop digging, stop making the problem worse. Don't make the hole deeper. And then you've got to train people, you know, how to, and put tools in place so that they're not writing, vulnerable code all the time. But we've got it. The only way you can do that is to impart knowledge to those software developers. It's three application security professionals cannot secure all the code being written by 3,000 developers and all the applications. I mean, we sold hundreds of different applications. So that math just doesn't work. We've got to get better at imparting more knowledge to the people we so fondly call end users. Any other questions on here?
Just an interesting comment from Ted there. And so true, Lynn. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, I'm wondering, I'm just trying to put myself in the typical user space, and would I prefer to be given a cybersecurity awareness training from someone who's in cyber or someone who's not? Because on one hand, you think you want this security expert to teach that or to train you on that. But then on the other hand, it's almost like they can't relate to you as a non-cyber IT person. And so they're going to kind of speak up here, and you're going to go, okay, sure, yeah.
You absolutely have to translate. And most of the people that are running training and awareness programs at large organizations in the US have been in a role previously where they've had to do some kind of translation between technology and the general population. Maybe not security, but some other kind of tech. That's a very common career path.
Don't you think also, Lisa, maybe that training should be based on the job roles as opposed to a universal training for everybody? For example, me as a cybersecurity person, you tell me, for example, that I'm supposed to use lowercase, uppercase, numbers and stuff, I'm going to laugh and say this is bad security. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, using this is 21st century, it's late 20th century type of security, it's really bad. Shouldn't there be maybe different trainings for different levels of people so that maybe they see things differently? Maybe for people that do marketing, it should be the marketing experts of cybersecurity. And for finance, it should be the cost of cybersecurity. And for IT people, maybe there's no training at all because IT people already know this stuff. Which would, you know, avoid.
Depends on who your IT people are, but we actually do that. We produce role-based training because that is exactly the case, what you're saying. There's a comment from Lynn here where she talks about her elderly dad as a representative user. I had this crazy idea to start filming. We have a series, it's on YouTube, it's free for anybody to use. You can show it to your parents, your families, your colleagues. If you go to the Media Pro YouTube page, it's called Mom Don't Click That, or if you just Google Media Pro Mom Don't Click That. So what we started doing, and I'm filming one tomorrow that's with the support of Dell, because my mom actually fell victim to a Dell support scam. But we filmed them with Calvin Coleman, the executive director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance, and a friend of mine from Raytheon, and a friend of mine from Microfocus. We filmed security professionals talking to their elderly parents about security issues that they've had. And some of them are stories of like, nope, I didn't click on this, especially the one with John Check from Raytheon. His mom says, nope, John tells me not to click on things, so I don't, you know, so I know better. And then there's some stories like Calvin Coleman from the NCSA with his dad. He had his Facebook account taken over, or my mom coughed up her credit card number for the Dell support scam. And so they're just stories. They're 3 to 5 minutes, and they're real people talking about things that happened to them. And they're a little bit funny and cute because you've got a security professional with their elderly parent, and aging parents say cute things. They're really funny. So we're trying to use the power of storytelling so that these are more relatable. You know, I've seen a few people comment, you can't talk down to people. You can't, you know, if you get too techie, if it's too confusing, like, you've got to relate to people. People have to want to hear what you have to say. You have to, I had a VP of marketing once who used to say, don't make people hungry. Don't feed them lunch. And so many times in security, we're do-gooders. We want the best thing to happen. We want the bad guys to lose and the good guys to win. And we're going to give you all this great advice. And we don't know how to leave them wanting more, right? We don't know how to like slowly pull people in to the ideas that we're trying to convince them of, to change their behavior, to use a password manager, to enable MFA, whatever the thing is. So we tend to throw all of our best advice at people all at once, and it's just too much. And your average human who's not a technologist just gets overwhelmed and tunes out. And so, so these stories are, you know, average humans talking to other average humans, our parents talking to whoever the audience is. We started creating these when COVID happened, because there's such a blur now between your work and your home life, and people have kids at home and they have aging parents to deal with. And so we saw a lot of employees of our customers asking for content that bridged the gap. That wasn't, because people don't just carry their technology habits, you know, they don't switch technology habits, whether they're working on their work PC or their home PC, right? They, or their laptop, they're, you know, you're one complete individual, regardless of where you're working and what you're doing. So if we can influence somebody's security habits in their personal life, then they're going to bring those back to the office, the virtual office. So I will actually put a call to action out there. If any of you have want to film an episode, it's free. We don't charge anything. We just get on a Zoom call with you, and you and your loved one, and it could be a mom, a dad, a sister, a brother, a kid, doesn't matter. The title is just Mom, Don't Click That, because we thought it would be catchy. And we just edit them down to be short enough to be intriguing, and we stick them on YouTube, and they're a lot of fun. They go out on social media, and we've had a lot of fun with those. That's right. So if you have a story to tell and you want your 15 minutes of fame, just hit me up.
Your 15 minutes of what you should not do, fame.
You're cute. You're cute. They have a nice moderator. And they're well done.
That's really cool. Yeah, no, we're actually working on that. Right now we have a partnership with a small nonprofit business, and we're trying to provide them with all kinds of different services. And one of them is cybersecurity awareness, because they literally have no security. I won't call out their name so nobody goes and hacks them, but they have no security at all. And obviously one of the main things they need is cybersecurity awareness training. So I know the SME that's working on that will love to hear this this webinar from you and see your links, because they do look cute.
Yeah, we do. We have a free Valentine's kit right now that's got a social engineering module in it and some funny security related Valentines with infographics. That's free. Every October, us and all of our competitors put out free materials for Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And then a lot of us, we did this year for Data Privacy Day at the end of January, which next year is going to be Data Privacy Week, because I'm working with Senator Blackburn to turn it into a week instead of a day. along with the National Cybersecurity Alliance. I'm on the board of the NCSA. We put out a free kit in January as well, we put it out in the fall for people getting ready for Data Privacy Week. So that has free training modules in it and posters and, you know, digital signage, Zoom backgrounds, infographics, articles, all kinds of stuff. So if you work with any organizations like the one you just described, and also if you go to staysafeonline.org, the NCSA website, they've got links to a ton of different resources from the Small Business Administration. Who else is on there? The FCC has free videos and free training modules. There's a lot of stuff out there for free for a small organization. That's definitely worthwhile. If you want to be more sophisticated, and, you know, larger organizations, like they have budgets for things like this, and they can get all the bells and whistles and have a more sophisticated program. But there's tons of stuff out there for free.
Yeah, I mean, since they're non-IT company, they definitely would probably resonate with your kind of stuff. So yeah. I think it's great. That's an awesome tip. All right. Well, geez, I can't believe we already are at the top of the hour. It's a great conversation. And I think one of the things that really resonated with your profile and your background and everything is for a lot of students that are not technical coming into our program, they may feel like they're never going to make it. They're never going to get into the real cyber, you know, field. But if they have a marketing background, clearly, or if they have a training background, an HR background, all of the, you know, different skill sets that you kind of mentioned, they have a leg up. I mean, there's jobs everywhere.
Absolutely.
So they don't really have to be completely technical.
If this marketing bozo can do it, then.
Me too. I have a bachelor's in psychology, so I kind of took a left turn. Took a left turn at the master's degree, but I'm definitely not a technical person. So this is great.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. Feel free to link to me on LinkedIn. I'm kind of a junkie on LinkedIn. So if anybody's got any questions they want to follow up, I'm more than happy to engage.
Definitely. We definitely will. Dr. Ricard, did you have any final words before we...
Well, thank you, Lisa, for accepting our invitation and spending an hour with us. Thank you for everybody for attending, and have a good night.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lisa. You have an awesome day. I appreciate it. Have a good night, everyone. Bye, folks. Thank you.